Good morning, everyone. I'm Liz Fraley from Single Sourcing Solutions. I'm your moderator. This is Janice Summers, our interviewer, and welcome to Sam Draga, today's guest in Room 42. Sam is a professor emeritus of technical communication at Texas Tech University. He's the co-author of several books, The Essentials of Technical Communication, Reporting Technical Information, and Editing the Design of Rhetoric. He was the series editor of the Alan Bacon series in technical communication, and just concluded his service as editor-in-chief of STC's journal, Technical Communication Quarterly, or publishes quarterly. He's been a high-volume publisher of research, having authored or co-authored a number of articles in journals and collections, many of which are on professional ethics and intercultural communication. He's a Fulbright specialist, a fellow of the Association of Teachers of Technical Writing. He's a recipient of STC's Award for Excellence in Teaching Technical Communication, the NCTE's English Award for Best Book in Technical and Scientific Communication, and the Best Article Reporting Historical Research in Technical and Scientific Communication. He's been the president of the ATTW and started their conference. And he's also the past chair of the TTU Department of English. An impressive day, and we're super glad to have you here. Today, he's here to help us start answering the question, how to navigate the ethical obligations of research and publishing in technical communication. Welcome.
Thank you. And thanks for that introduction.
Sam, we are so thrilled to have you and just so honored that you've been willing to come and spend some time with us and talk about ethics. So honestly, ethics is a little intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes, I get a little like, when you bring up ethics, it's like, okay, why is that we get so intimidated by ethics?
I know people kind of sit up like you did.
yeah, right.
Kind of just straighten your shoulders, right? Yeah. Like, oh. Well, I think, everybody wants to do the right thing. And I think most people think of themselves as ordinarily, trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And we're worried that we might make mistakes. And I think we recognize the consequences for ourselves and our sense of ourselves, but also for, friends and family who might be affected by, mistakes in the decisions that we make. So, mm-hmm. And nobody wants to be accused of being unethical.
Right. Well, and it can be disastrous. I mean, it's one thing in your personal life, but quite another in your professional life.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I always advise students that if if you're asked to do something that you find uncomfortable, or that makes you uncomfortable, then it's very important that you not accuse somebody of asking you to do something that's unethical, but to say to explain that makes me not uncomfortable, and to explain why. But also to have the backup of not just your own sense of what's right and wrong, but what your profession thinks is right and wrong. So to know the code of conduct of your organization, to know the code of conduct of your professional association, so that it's not just you arguing with your supervisor, it's you saying what your organization allows you to do, mm-hmm. or doesn't allow you to do.
And you bring up a really good point, because I remember from business college, ethics, you always talk about ethics, but there's always a slant on ethics, and it depends on where you're coming from. So I think in the professional life, it's really, you bring up a really important point to know the ethics. All companies have an ethical credo. They all have their stated ethics.
Right.
Don't they? Right. I mean, I can't think of any company that doesn't.
Yeah. They all have a code of conduct or a set of ethical standards.
Right.
And oftentimes, with larger organizations, there's an entire website built around that code of conduct with other resources, frequently asked questions, hotlines where you can call for more information, et cetera. But as an employee of that organization, you will find strength if you are familiar with those resources, know the code of conduct, know what's permitted and what isn't, so that it's not just you against your supervisor.
Right.
It's your supervisor's asked you to do something. It makes you feel uncomfortable, and this opens a conversation.
Right.
And the reason that you raise this question about what you've been asked to do is because you know the code of conduct says X, Y, and Z. And you can start a negotiation. I can't do this that you've asked me to do, but I could do this. And so if you can solve your supervisor's problem, and offer an alternative,
right,
ethical action to what has been asked of you that makes you uncomfortable, that shows that you are a problem solver.
And not an accuser, because I think you bring up another really good point, Sam.
Yeah.
That, you can't go at somebody and say you're being unethical.
right.
That goes over well.
Yeah, that ends the conversation, right?
Yeah. Kill it right there.
Yeah.
But to go and say, okay, well, this is, for me personally, I think this is a bit, I'm uncomfortable with this, and here's the reason why.
Yeah.
But here's a potential solution that
right.
I thought of. Right. So kind
right.
of giving that supervisor or manager a way to correct the situation that's more acceptable. Right.
Right.
Without
right.
beating them over the head with the book on ethics.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You don't want to come across as morally superior.
Yes. Even if you are.
Even if you are. So you want to avoid, both that sense of superiority, but you also don't want to be subservient.
Correct.
So you need to demonstrate that you do think about these things, that you can't just be, that you won't do just everything that's asked of you.
Because that's not what you're hired for anyway.
No, it's not what you're hired for.
And if you're in a research project, that's not what you're asked to participate in a research project.
Exactly.
Right?
And you have multiple ethical obligations. I mean, you have an obligation to your discipline as well as to your employer.
Yeah.
You have to make your discipline operate in honorable ethical ways. So you could do the expedient thing and do whatever your employer wants you to do, but that's not good for ultimately
anybody.
Your employer, but it's
True.
Also not good for you. It's
True.
Not good for your field. It's not good for the academic institution that trained you, because yeah. if you do something that is unethical, people will wonder, like, well, why, what kind of education did you get? It's important that you stand up not only for yourself, but for all of those who put you in that employer's employment.
We have a duty, as it were, as professionals in the field.
Yes, absolutely.
To uphold now,
as well as to the wider society.
In technical communications, is there also a code of ethics?
There is a code of ethics for each of the major organizations in the field have an ethical set of guidelines or a code of conduct. And if you're operating in the field, it would be useful for you to know what those are. The SDC ethical guidelines are relatively, straightforward, simple principles. Others like the Association of Teachers of Technical Writing, they have a set of ethical guidelines which outline what your responsibilities are to the profession, to your students, to your institution, et cetera. So they are organized in different ways, explained in different ways. IEEE has a set of 10 principles that apply across the field of engineering, but also mm-hmm. apply to people who are engaged in technical communication in that field. So it's important, I think, you know, regardless of the organization that you're operating in, is, you know, familiarize yourself with all of these codes of conduct and ethical guidelines, as well as your employers, so that you have a wider understanding, a wider appreciation of the scope of ethics as it might apply to your field. And especially if you are engaged in intercultural communication, then you also have to recognize that, you know, different cultures have different ethical perspectives. And it's important for you to be able to recognize that perhaps people from other cultures are coming at questions of ethics, you know, from a different perspective, mm-hmm. that might be unfamiliar to you or might strike you as unethical.
Yeah.
That's a lot to have to balance.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, those prisms, it's like a kaleidoscope.
It is. And that's, you know, what makes ethics, I think, both challenging but also interesting, mm-hmm. because it is this, you know, continuing set of challenges, and nobody has all ethical questions answered. It's a series of continuing moving targets.
That's why they have general guidelines. You kind of have to fill in the blanks sometimes.
Right. Yes. And it helps sometimes to practice. I mean, and that's what, you know, that's what reading cases is useful for. When you read an ethical case or an article that deals with a historical case where ethical issues were raised, it gives you, I think, a better understanding, a better appreciation of how ethics intersects with some of the decisions that technical communicators have to make. And it gives you a way of looking at that case and thinking, well, is that how I would have answered it? And see how others might have addressed some of the same questions that you need to address in your field, in your particular place of employment. So cases are, I think, you know, quite useful. There's an organization for editors of publications. It's an international organization called COPE. It's the Committee on Publication Ethics. Okay. And one of the great strengths of that organization is they publish cases of previous ethical issues that have been raised, and then how those have been addressed. So it gives guidance to current editors, yeah, as to how they might address or approach particular ethical issues that are raised.
So it also demonstrates that a link that we can share with people.
If you go to publicationethics.org.
Yeah.
Publicationethics.org will take you to the COPE website, and there you'll find a variety of resources, but also their list of cases.
Mm-hmm. That was going to be one of my questions for you.
Okay. Yeah. 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 It's it also demonstrates the kind of the scope of ethical questions, you know, right, things that you might not have thought about as being a potential hazard for you as you operate in your organization.
So. Because I think that's the other thing too, is a lot of us, you know, I mean, really honestly, in the field itself, they're pretty stand up people. Right. And I think in the profession, just like in everybody that I've ever met in this profession, has been, they really want to do the right thing. It's kind of written into their DNA. So yeah, everyone, you know, we all think we're pretty stand up people, and they don't know if they're not necessarily aware if they're doing something that might be unethical.
Right. They might, you know, appreciate having the perspective of, you know, reading through previous cases, mm-hmm. and seeing how different organizations have addressed, you know, similar issues,
right,
but also to recognize, you know, the wide scope of issues that that are out there
Right.
that perhaps they should be thinking of when they look at their own employment situation.
Exactly.
There may be things going on in their organization that they've never thought about, and
Right.
maybe we shouldn't be doing it that way,
right,
or maybe
right.
there's a better way that we could be addressing this particular problem.
Yeah, because I see things a certain way, right? And Liz
right.
will ask these really interesting questions. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
So I
yeah.
think having that resource to go look at cases that bring up ethical questions is a good way too for us to gain perspective from a lot of people related to ethics.
Right, right. Because, if we've been doing it this way for 5 years, 10 years, that's the way we've always done it.
You
And
get
so,
numb to it. Yeah.
And so, yeah, you do. Well,
and you think that's the proper way because that's what's been around you.
Because we've always done it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way we've always done it.
Nobody's complained before.
Yes, right. So, yeah, so I think that, familiarizing yourself with resources and talking to people, talking to other people about ethical issues, practicing ethics so that these issues are, sort of salient in your mind, not a constant worry for you, but something that you are alert to. Because there are ethical issues that will crop up on the job and they can go ignored or they can be addressed.
Better to address them than ignore things.
Yeah. But there are things that, sometimes you don't recognize that maybe that's a problem. I had a reviewer once who, having reviewed a manuscript, said, I really like this manuscript, and I shared, had read the manuscript and was deciding on, whether we would publish it or not, and recommended it for publication. But it hadn't yet been published, and he and the individual wrote and said, I really like this article, and I shared it with my team. And I had to write back and say, well, that's a problem. Because until the article is published, it's really private. And it's something between the author and the journal and should not be circulated widely until it's published. And the author has agreed to have it published in the version that is finally accepted for publication.
Right.
And that was something that the reviewer had never thought of. Oh, that as a reviewer, I have an obligation of confidentiality with these manuscripts that I'm reviewing. Mm-hmm. And it hadn't occurred to me as an editor that was something that I had to tell a reviewer, but it was in this case. And fortunately, that was the only case. The reviewer, promptly wrote back and said, oh, yes, okay, I recognize that was a mistake. And fortunately, my team is only, two other people. So, okay, fine. But lesson learned, I learned a lesson. Okay, that's something that, I have to talk to reviewers about as the editor. But also something that reviewer learned.
So that's kind of like one of those, if you're a hiring manager or if you're leading a research project, that part of your onboarding practice, if you're bringing in researchers, is to have a conversation about ethics and to help them understand what the ethics are in their role and responsibility and the ethics for the project, right?
Exactly. And you'll see that, like major employers have ethics training. They have ethics resources. Now, for some in some organizations, it's just sending the new employee to the ethics website,
it's a piece of paper HR has employees sign.
Right.
They don't
have to
read.
It's like the terms of agreement when you download new software.
That's very different than actually having a conversation with your employers or your new researchers about their roles and responsibilities and ethics. I mean, you don't have to have it like all the time, but
when you're
onboarding, it might be a good practice, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
And then it's not such a difficult conversation.
Right, right. So, yeah, so to familiarize reviewers with their ethical responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was one of the things that prompted, a co-author of mine, Dan Voss, and I, we wrote an article for Intercom, which is SDC's monthly magazine, several years ago, on the multiple ethical responsibilities in research, the responsibilities that, you know, authors have, but also that reviewers and editors have and that readers have, because readers have responsibilities when they interact with research. So
they do. I agree with that. And they need to ask questions and they need to look for certain things. So what are some of the things that are really key and critical when it comes to research, you know, when you're embarking on a research project, when it comes to ethics?
Well, there's a number of things, and it depends on the kind of research project that you're doing, whether it's a qualitative or a quantitative research project. Mm-hmm. But you want to make sure that you are thorough in exploring the existing research. So that, and again, you don't want to waste the journal's time that to which you were going to submit the manuscript. You don't want to waste your reader's time by making them read something that is like empty of new information. Time is the thing that we don't get back. And so it's the thing that you don't want to waste, because you can't, I mean, these are, you know, finite moments of our lives. Mm-hmm. And if you waste the time of other people, I mean, that itself, I think, is unethical. So you want to make sure that you are giving people value for the time that they give you.
Mm-hmm.
So as a researcher, I mean, I think that's a primary consideration going in. Do I have something that's important to say? Do I have a topic or a project that is important for readers to know about? And if you don't have that confidence, then that's not a research project that you should be starting. You shouldn't be trying to publish just for the sake of publication. You should be trying to publish because you have something that your readers need to know in order to, you know, live their lives better, make better decisions, take appropriate action, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that kind of confidence, then I think that's your first ethical question. And then you want to make sure that you are inclusive in the research that you're doing, so that you are inclusive of the existing research that's been done, but also to make sure that you are looking for researchers who are oftentimes disregarded or who might not have been given the opportunity to publish in the most prestigious or available journals. And so to make sure that that the scholars that you are citing in your research are diverse and truly representative of the field as it is being practiced, so that you have a broad representation and broad perspective going into your topic, and then to make sure that you are inclusive when you are looking for participants in your research. So
because I really want to you to help emphasize this point, these last couple of points that you've made.
Okay.
And that is because it's really easy for us to get into our narrow focus or our comfort zone or our field of friends.
Right.
And it's really important that we make a conscious effort to be uncomfortable and to stretch beyond our limited view and our limited circle and intentionally seek out people who haven't been recognized, aren't the usual suspects.
Right.
Well, and if we're going to make claims, you need to know that it's not just your perspective
and
your friend's perspective. You need to make sure that it has that reach that you think it does.
Right. Yeah. And it also adds, I think, for a richer paper. If you're working on a research project, it adds for a richer content that you're creating in the research that you're doing. I mean, that's how you get strength, is in diversity, right?
Right, right. that you aren't just citing all the usual suspects,
yes.
but that or you know the people that you know already, but
yeah.
that you are making this deliberate effort to you know reach beyond your circle of friends, your circle of familiar scholars, the most frequently cited scholars. You know, yes, you can you can and should include the most frequently cited scholars, but also you want to make sure that you are reaching beyond that circle.
Mm-hmm.
So that you are truly inclusive and representative of the wide scope of people participating in this field and contributing mm-hmm. their research to it. And then you want to make sure that when you choose your participants, you are inclusive and are again representing the population that you are studying in your research.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to make sure when you write and when you publish that you are making your material available to the widest circle of readers, so that your information is accessible to people whose lives, jobs, livelihoods might be influenced or improved by the research that you're doing. So that again, it
right.
doesn't benefit just this small circle
right.
of the usual scholars, but that it reaches out and has as much impact as possible.
Right, and that applies to research no matter where you're doing the research for,
right.
whether it's academia or as a professional
right.
for your company, for
right.
a project that you're working on. All of those factors, I think. Play, right? It's no different.
Yeah, right. And you right. want to make sure that you are inclusive of people who might have various kinds of difficulties accessing the information, so that you again make this conscious and deliberate effort to be inclusive, to make accessible the work mm-hmm. that you're doing.
Right.
And to bring people into the field who might otherwise and historically have been left out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's you know in just designing the basic research to begin with, when you're planning
right.
this out, all of these things should be baked into your plan.
Right.
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 From
yes.
the beginning.
Yeah. And then you write in a way that allows your research to be as accessible as possible. And that means not just to readers here in the United States reading English,
right.
but you write in a way that would promote ready translation so
right.
that your work can then become available to people whose language is not English. So
right.
that your so that the benefits of this research don't just reach people
yeah.
in developed nations, but people in developing nations as well.
Right.
And the more if your writing is dense and incomprehensible and you know virtually incomprehensible to English speakers, you have made that material you know far more difficult for interpreters and translators.
Mm-hmm.
And it limits the scope of the people who might benefit from your research.
Now, if I
using things like simplified English, you know, we're writing as much as possible in simplified English so that translation is more readily available.
Right, right. Making things easy to comprehend, easy to understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Minimalism is always a nice thing to apply.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. It's a brilliant exercise.
Focus.
We're not here to talk about that. Don't let me go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I'll start beating my drum. back to this. So I'm thinking about like, so if I want to like say there's a topic that I want to do some research on, is there a place or is there somebody that I can go to that could help like review things? Is there an ethical guide? Is there, how would I, because I would want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing, right?
Sure.
So is there an ethical guide? Who's the guru of ethics that I could go to? How would you do that?
Well, this committee of journal editors, these are editors of the journals in the field of technical communication, who have newly come together at the prompting of Derek Ross of Auburn University, who's the editor of Communication Design Quarterly. He brought us together and said, there are issues of diversity that we ought to address, issues of ethics that we ought to address, and we could do it better if we were doing it together.
Yeah.
And so that group of editors has been meeting to look at ways that reviewer guidelines might be improved, ethical practices of manuscript submission might be improved to promote diversity and ethics, and that committee of editors has just this last Monday offered its first lunch with editors, where anybody can come in and ask questions of these editors and address just those kinds of issues, and can meet for virtual mentoring. And they are planning on doing more of these in the future, and then like posting the conversation that occurs so that people can go back and look at sessions that they might have missed. And they're also talking about putting together a YouTube channel where some of this information would also be available. So that's, I think, a ready resource that nice. New authors might take advantage of.
And even old authors.
there's also an international organization called Author Aid that allows published scholars to offer mentoring to new scholars.
Oh, nice.
And so so if you are a scholar who would like to mentor emerging scholars, you can apply and enter your information, and you create a profile on their website, and then individuals who want a mentor do the same. And then through this website, through the Author Aid website, you find each other and you make a connection. And then your communication is all through their website. The exchange of files is all through their website. So it's all safe and it's tracked. And you can also, meet through, Zoom sessions if you want live through to meet with your mentor. So that's another opportunity. And there are a number of, again, that's an international organization, and it's a great opportunity for scholars, especially for scholars from developing nations who often don't have access to the kinds of, library resources or the kinds of mentoring opportunities that scholars, for example, in the United States or Europe might enjoy.
I think those are great references for all of our listeners and watchers, because, I mean, even if you're not writing research right now or you're not conducting research, say you're in the professional field, still understanding where those ethics are coming from when you're reading research that will influence you, because research touches all of us.
Right.
Either, even if we're not participating or writing it, it's going to come in to influence you at some point. So having access to being able to listen to questions that other people may be asking also, I think, is very beneficial for people. I think those are key resources.
Thank you. Yeah, you are right that research affects us, positively and negatively, and good research as well as bad research affects us. We suffer from bad research oftentimes. So it's important that we be as careful as possible about making sure that there's as little bad research out there as possible, and so that people benefit from legitimate information as opposed to disinformation.
And personally, I like the fact that you're having conversations, because I'm kind of geared towards having a conversation. That's what Room 42 is about. So good for you guys. Because there's a lot of other juicy information that comes out in those. So making them referenceable and searchable, I think is going to be a huge benefit for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes you don't know you have a question until somebody else asks it.
Exactly. Until somebody else asks that same question, and you think, oh, yeah. And then you might have a follow-up question to that. Or you might, you know, challenge the answer that you get or you know, ask that individual to elaborate. I think it's a great opportunity. I think having the multiple perspectives of various editors is always, I think, a good thing. Mm-hmm. So as I said, the first editors meet the editors lunch, Zoom lunch, was Monday, and another one will be scheduled with a different group of, I think they did three editors this last time. So it's a different constellation of editors each time. So
nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So you can get different perspectives.
I have to put this on my list of things to go watch.
Yeah.
And I don't have a website for that or the Zoom invitation, you know, in my head. But if somebody wants to email me the next time an invitation comes, I'd be happy to share the connection to it. Yeah.
Cool. So what happens if I've written my research, done my research, written my research paper, and all of a sudden the ethical flags go up?
Yeah, and that happened, you know, and that can happen. And so you always need to be prepared to abandon a research project because it has become ethically fraught. And that can be painful sometimes, especially if it's like a dissertation. That's where going into the dissertation project, good mentoring is essential. And ideally you've come out of, you know, your thesis or dissertation training, knowing, you know, what are the ingredients for, you know, ethical research that have to be covered. But if you, you know, make mistakes or overlook things like getting, you know, human consent forms, then, you know, nobody wants to publish that because, because that research is unethical. You do, in fact, need to be prepared to abandon a project that you can't save, but there may be ways to save a project. And that's where you can talk to scholars in the field who have published. You might have a mentor in your organization or at your academic institution that you can look to and say, you know, I've run into this problem. How exactly might I address it? Or if you are in the process of working with an editor at a journal, you might ask the editor and say, I've run into this problem. What do I do about this? Where do I go for help with this? How do I negotiate this ethical problem in a way that would make the article still publishable?
Mm-hmm. But
that's where, you know, having those relationships where you can get good advice is important.
Right.
Because the situation will change. I mean, I can't give you a yes or no answer to that question or a simple answer to that question because it's all contingent on the issues involved.
It's kind of a soft target. There's a lot of factors that play into it.
Yeah.
It's an art more than a science.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A lot of factors. So it's not, you don't want to brush it under the carpet. You don't want to hide it away. You just, you have to deal with it because those things can really come back and be deleterious.
Right.
In ways that you don't realize.
Right. And it's also putting bad research out there.
Mm-hmm.
Research which has ethical problems. It sets a bad example. And every time you publish, you have to keep in mind that you are creating an example for subsequent scholars. So your article that gets published in a journal is something that somebody else is going to read, and they're going to look at it as an example of research that they could do.
Yes, it becomes a touchstone.
Absolutely.
And it becomes a touchstone for behavior or, you know, like we're all influenced. We read these articles and they shape our minds.
Right.
Right. And our decisions. So they
Right.
are touchstones.
Right. And so
They're
if you're doing something that's ethically slippery, you create a new and lower standard for the
right.
ethics of your organization, for the ethics of your field. And that's something that you don't want to do.
No, and I don't, yeah. So trying to be published just to be published is not a good practice. It's because you can end up into that slippery slope. And nobody wants the slimy rocks. Nobody wants slimy Dutch yeah. stones.
Well, and even if you think it helps you, it hurts.
Yeah, in the end, it
see
hurts.
That. Yeah.
Because right. eventually it comes back to you.
It makes people
yeah. come to light eventually.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes people less interested in the next thing you publish.
Yeah.
Which may in fact be more interesting, more valuable.
Right.
But,
and
but
might
I,
be perfectly fine. But
right.
because you yeah, because you
But
getting...
I just read something that was, you know, a recycled version of something that you published earlier and it looks like you just, you know, like teased out, you know, some unimportant piece of information from it from an earlier study and you know, it was really kind of a waste of my time. Now I'm not going to read the next thing you write because it wasn't valuable for me.
Right.
And now I might miss something that is valuable.
Yeah.
Right.
So unfortunately.
And you've created this model of people who publish things that shouldn't be published. And while your article was getting published, somebody else's article was not getting published.
Right.
Because, you know, because we're talking about finite opportunities here for people to publish.
Right.
So, yeah. We all have to be responsible.
Yeah.
Did you have one question that you wanted to ask Liz?
Well,
I know we're out of time.
I know we are so out of time, but like this has been fascinating, right? And it just keeps coming. So I just have one last one because we're talking about citing other people and
yeah.
you know, slot. What about citing your own work?
There are people who like to cite their own research for purposes of building up the number of citations that their research enjoys. And that I think is an unethical practice. So I am always very cautious about citing my own research. Now, if I've done something in a study that I think is absolute, you know, that
right.
is absolutely essential as, you know, previous reading that someone should know about, then it seems legitimate. But I will often, you know, if and when I cite myself, I'm often critical of it because I've learned more than I knew when I published that. And so there, you know, I will, you know, point out the limitations of that earlier research. Because now I know more.
Fair enough. That's a good. I like
but,
that.
But they, but there but it is the case that you know there are some people and you can tell you know
sure.
when someone is just you know like filling their article with citations of their
pumping
own research
up.
And
yeah.
And it's surprising you know sometimes you know who engages in that you know that you would think that you know you're a prominent scholar you don't need to be doing this. But it might be the practice that they learned, you know, might have been the practice that was encouraged at their institution or their place of employment.
Sometimes people get lazy.
Yeah.
Pressure's there, you know.
But it's you know it's self-aggrandizement, and you know, I guess I was you know taught to be different, so.
I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and
it's great information. It's been the fastest 45 minutes of my life. So
I can't believe we're already
I know.
Over time, but I really, truly, actually really enjoyed talking to you. And I appreciate the approach to ethics that it's not so scary.
Okay.
And it's not like the police. It's like, these are good things, and we should all encourage more conversations and ethics.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And I would love to have you back again because I think we didn't get a chance to really talk about everything.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there's so much more, like in edits, the editors, and all kinds of stuff that I want to talk to you about that we don't have time right now. But I would love to have you back. I really would.
That was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a privilege to talk to you, Sam.
Yeah, well,
truly.
It's been a joy. Thanks.
Awesome. thanks for coming, and we'll see you all again.